All right, so 17.1
yes.
is in the books. I called all my workouts this week 17.1.
That's all we're doing.
Squat triples at 683, 17.1. You know, pull-ups, chin-ups, back, bicep, accessory, 17.1.
I get it. I get it. Man, We've been hanging out a lot lately. You just want to feel like you're part of the CrossFit community.
Yeah. I wore my Metcons. I wore, like, these Reebok shorts that are, like, just a little just uncomfortably tight around, like, mid-quad cut.
Did you wear, like, just spandex pants and nothing else?
Is that a big CrossFit thing?
Oh, that's a big...
Really?
Yeah.
I did wear a bandana. I find you guys are big onto that.
All right.
The bandana thing.
I personally am not.
No, you don't have... I mean, I don't have the hair for it either.
Yeah.
I spent a lot of time, like, using mustache wax. Ooh. That's another thing that I noticed CrossFitters are big into. The, like... It's funny because I think the term metrosexual is, like, you... Oh, wow. We're just
getting... How do we get here?
We're coming right over the plate with this. I think it's like you're a guy that likes girl things and girls, right? Like, I think that's about, like,
yeah,
you know...
like, you have a girlfriend so you could use her hair straightener.
Perfect. No, I mean, not totally far from perfect. Like, not that there's anything wrong with that, but, like, it's a weird sort of, like, most women don't have beards. Right. But a lot of these, like, metro... You know, like, beard culture. It's like, in Canada, dude, you're from PA. You have a beard because 6 months out of the year, it pays to have a face sweater.
Yeah,
like, period.
Absolutely.
But, like, the amount of, like, primping and, like, waxing and, like, it's, dude, just have a beard. Don't, like, don't, like, make a call. Just don't dress it up. Don't do what a woman would do if she had a beard. Anyways. 17.1. How did it go? What was it? What did you guys do?
Yeah. 17. I don't
Off
even know what to make of that
tight
last
shorts.
Statement.
Yeah.
But yeah, 17.1. So the workout was, there's a 20-minute time cap.
Okay. So the whole thing was 20 minutes.
First, if you couldn't finish it.
Oh, okay. I gotcha.
That's
I gotcha.
A 20-minute
cutoff.
Right.
That's
the workout itself. You have a 50-pound dumbbell. You do 10 alternating hand dumbbell snatches.
Okay.
All right. 15 burpee box jump overs, and then it's 5 rounds through that. The dumbbell snatches go up by 10 every round. So it's 10 snatches, 15 burpee box jump overs, 20 snatches, 15, 30, 15, 40, 15, last okay. rounds, 50, and 15.
So the idea is do that for time.
As quick as you can.
How fast did you do that in?
I finished it in 11 minutes
Holy
and
shit.
50 seconds.
So you're well within the cap.
Yes. Yeah.
Do they release statistics on how many people that attempt it finish it?
Yeah, there's actually behind the whiteboard is one. I could pull it up, but
yeah, just out
of
curiosity.
I think it was about somewhere around 50% of men finished, about 60% of women finished.
Okay. No, they're not using 50-pound dumbbells.
Women use a 35-pound
okay.
dumbbell.
All right.
24-inch box for the gentleman, 20-inch box for the ladies.
Now, can you use this as a predictive measure of what's to come? Like, because this seems to qualify certain criteria of, like, movements and, like, anaerobic activity. It's like, can you pretty much say, now that this is done, we're not really going to see or not likely see X, Y, and Z? Or is that just sort of, like, CrossFit folklore?
Absolutely.
Okay.
You're a very observant man.
I do what I can.
So the goal is over 5 weeks, they'll do the best to test as broad a spectrum of fitness
okay.
as they can while keeping it accessible to, you know, basically every CrossFit
sure.
gym in the world. So there are some limitations. They're not going to have you go, you know, run a mile, swim a mile,
yeah.
whatever, shit like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, a lot of barbell stuff. There's the dumbbell snatch and the burpee box jump were two new movements we haven't seen in the open
okay.
before. Burpee box jump over. Sorry. But
now, are we thinking, like, there's got to – that, I would say, is more – anaerobic, more like cardiovascular endurance base, right? Like, that sounds pretty taxing on the old on
yeah.
the ticker, right?
Yeah, it's a lot of movement.
So you're thinking there's got to be a strength based thing somewhere in the next couple of weeks, right?
Yeah, so what I'm thinking probably, so if you guys listening, you guys will know by now, but today Thursday the second of March.
Yeah. So we're lagging
March
a few 2nd. Weeks.
So
behind.
we'll learn the second workout tonight. But
okay.
my prediction is something that's either a little heavier barbell.
You've heard it here first.
No.
This will be
imagine though,
like predictive, like if you're able to predict it. So you're thinking heavy barbell,
heavier, not necessarily heavy in the sense of, you know, one rep max, but
okay.
heavier for the open, which would be probably moderate weight barbell and a more complex, probably something less than that, maybe. You know, it depends on the movement, but maybe like a 165 snatch or
okay.
maybe 185 clean, something
okay.
like that. I don't think we'll see deadlifts this week because everyone's back was fucked.
I was going to say, that had to be a good week for business in the office. Yeah. Hey, jeez.
Yeah, that's
they just got chiropractors writing these these workouts.
Yeah, that's the week I staple some business cards on the score sheets.
Yeah, just like leave them on the floor because that's where you're going to find everyone after the workout.
Yeah, but and probably a higher skilled gymnastic movement, maybe a handstand push-up, a chest to bar pull-up, something like that.
So, I mean, that sounds like it's in your wheelhouse.
Yeah, I mean,
I guess that's the point, right?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I try to make these things in my wheelhouse. Yeah. But I'm a true CrossFitter in the fact that I don't really excel at any one thing. I'm just kind of even keel the whole time.
Better than mediocre.
I'm that guy that I'll hover right around, you know, where I need to be all week, and that results in me finishing higher up than people that have those peaks and valleys.
Yeah.
Right?
More well-rounded.
I stay in the same, you know? It's not always the same people above me, not always the same people below me, but I'm pretty even keel.
When the dust settles, Junta's going to be there.
Yeah, so one workout, I'm never going to win. You give me 12 workouts, I'll probably be somewhere close to the top.
Nice.
So
good shit.
Yeah. Right on. How about, so that's 17.1. It was good.
Yeah,
good.
It had a beginning, a middle, and an end.
That happened. Yeah. And the end is here, so we'll move on with life. Let's talk about you. You got some meets coming up.
Meets, Australia. Plural.
Yeah.
Plural now.
So
yeah.
Australia.
Australia is, so shit, by the time this is up, I think I'll be there.
Cool.
13th fly out, compete the 18th. Things are going well. Hit some top triples on squats, and then got invited. I'm going to use the word compete, but I'm going to preface this. Like, if you've ever seen the movie Radio, where like Cuba Gooding Jr. pushes like the grocery cart around and then he's like, he gets to run the football in for a touchdown. That's going to be me at my next competition after Australia. Like, just, so the US Open is, it's in San Diego on April 15th. There's just, I mean, I'm better at not getting hurt than I am at lifting weights. So sometimes you just got to show up. So I'm really good at showing up. So there was some lifters that went down to injuries on like the quote unquote heavyweight day, which is like basically 198 and above. It's one of the larger cash or the largest cash purse powerlifting competition that I've ever heard of. So they're subdividing men and women into two categories. I mean, we'll still have like, you know, 198 lifters, 220 lifters, 242, 275, 308 weight classes. Mm-hmm. But the weight classes above 198, everyone in that individual class is going to get ranked against each other, like the winners. And then the winner of that, you know, quote unquote heavyweight of 198 and above gets 40 Gs, below gets 40 Gs. Same thing with the women. I'm not quite sure of the cutoff. And then each winner of respective classes gets 1,000. And I think if you break a record, you get 1,000.
Okay.
I'm going to be quote unquote, I'm going to be there lifting weights at the same time in the same place. There will be no competing going on. My goal, so the meet, the US Open in San Diego is 24-hour weigh-ins. Okay. And the meet I'm doing in Australia 3.5-4 weeks before is 2-hour weigh-ins. Ugh. So I'll be able to put on 20 pounds.
20 pounds in 24 hours.
Yeah, I did 24 and 24 last meet.
I haven't put on 20 pounds since high school.
Yeah. I mean, it's insane. So it's going to be like, I still have to cut down to get into the 242 class for Australia. I still have a couple pounds to go. But so my biggest thing is like, I'm not going to get too much stronger, right? In a month, it's really not going to happen. But if I can get 20 pounds heavier, it'll be sort of an interesting thing that I'm going to track as far as like, I mean, there'll be a few factors that'll contribute to what hopefully will be a better total in San Diego than in Australia, but like I'll have my coach there, I'll have some teammates competing there. You know, it's a 7.5-hour drive 3 days before instead of a 19.5-hour flight 3 days before.
Yeah.
But all variables considered, the one major difference is going to be the weight, right? So I'm interested to see what an extra 20 pounds of body weight leads to the total. So still, I mean, Australia is still the one I'm peaking for. It's still kind of the main one on like on my mind.
Yeah.
So I can be more competitive than I'm not going to be in San Diego. But yeah, so that's meets plural now coming up.
Awesome.
Episode 11.
Yes.
Treatment and training.
Yeah.
So this was prompted. A friend of ours, Ian Cook, chiropractor down in San Diego, was asking us our opinions on how we integrate care, treatment, chiropractic as a physical therapist, whatever, massage therapy, acupuncture, whatever your go is, into our training regimen. in season, off season. So right now, I mean, you're in the thick of it. I'm in the thick of it.
Yep.
How do you, like, how often are you getting treated? What modalities do you like? How does it differ from, like, quote unquote, in season to off season? So, like, sort of what's your take on your personal approach to staying injury free, or at least keeping it together during, like, kind of the thick of it?
Yeah. So my personal approach to that is I do a lot of self-treatment, as I'm sure you do,
because,
you know, I have the tools, I have the knowledge to be able to assess
and that's figure the thing.
Out what's going on.
The self-assessment comes first.
Yeah, self-assessment. You have to realize, okay, am I just really sore from this workout, or is something actually wrong here? But now this is, over the next next four coming weeks, this is it. Like, this is where I figure out if I'm going to that next step or not. So I need to really be on my game. I'll hit the open workouts usually twice a week. I'll hit it Friday and I'll hit it again on Monday.
So you just hit 17.1. Same thing, Friday, Monday?
Friday, Monday.
Was your Monday time better than your Friday time?
Yes.
Okay, is that usually the case?
Yeah, I'm going to knock on something here, but I've never redone a workout and done worse.
Okay.
So it's just like we talked about. You're watching game footage. I videotape my workouts. Yeah. I go through it. I'll probably watch it 3 to 5 times over the weekend, and I'll know exactly what I need to do coming back into it to shave off some time. It's all about execution then. But as far as my treatment goes, to keep me in that at that point where I can push as hard as I need to, I will adjustments, regular just manual chiropractic adjustments. I like to get full spine adjusted once a week in season. Usually off season, it's kind of more of an as-needed thing.
Yeah, push it out a little bit.
Every other week, maybe, is a, probably a more realistic time frame. But unless I have something, you know, something actually going on. But other than that, myofascial release sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so I'll do myofascial release sort of stuff, whether that's, you know, ART, MRT, lacrosse ball stuff on myself.
Yeah.
All that sort of stuff. And then IASTM, instrument assisted, hot grips.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. Hi, Frank.
Yeah,
Frank Osborne is probably definitely not listening to it. But if you are listening and know Frank, kick him in the ass for us.
Tag him in this. Yeah, we'll tag him on Facebook.
Yeah. But,
and then I'll use a compact stim machine also just for a little bit of added recovery. But that's the majority of what I'll do.
And that's in season, you got the compacts, Graston, ISTM.
No holds barred. And I actually, just recently, this week, Tuesday, I tweaked my elbow a little bit.
Doing
front
what?
Squatting.
Ew.
Of all things, fucking front squatting. Yeah, so it was just a little bit of a wrist flexor issue.
Yeah.
So I went in right away the next day. I got some laser treatment on it.
Okay.
So significantly.
So you would
better.
Say, like, in season, very reactive as far as treatment goes, whereas off-season you have some more time, a little bit more like assessment of underpinning imbalances based on the problems you were sort of seeing throughout, like you just have a wrist flexion issue, might be a shoulder thing. So in 6 weeks, 7 weeks, when you got some time, that's sort of the route you go as far as, you know, maybe more onus on yourself, less on like going in getting like just...
Exactly. Yeah, that off-season is more so about preparing, you know, wide spectrum.
Yeah.
So that not only am I prepared in the physical aspect, you know, I can do all these things.
Yeah.
But the balance side, the symmetry, all that stuff, I'm preparing. It's prehab is part of that.
Sure.
You know?
Now, you know, like you mentioned a lot of different, like, treatment modalities. And I think this is interesting because we practice really similar. We always have. Where it's like, I think a lot of people pigeonhole themselves as I'm a this practitioner, I'm a that, or, you know, he gets known for, oh, he's like an active release guy, or he's an ISTM guy.
Yeah.
Now, how do you sort of pick and choose where to implement what? Like you said, laser on the elbow. So you went into a clinic that had like a class 3. Now, uninitiated listeners, like there's different classifications of lasers. A lot of times, I mean, the class, I think it's what?
1, 2, 3.
Yeah, and there's like a 3A and 3B. 3B is like you're getting tattoos removed or some shit. Like I think 4 is like we're trying to blow up the sun. But like 1 and like some people will try and sell sell you on like class, I think just 2A lasers, which is essentially like someone charging you $50 an hour to shine like a, or $50 every 10 minutes to shine like a pen light on your arm. Now, like, how do you pick and choose what modality where?
Yeah, so that's something I use my clinical experience to do.
Sure.
So I knew this one is just from the onset, how it went down, everything that happened.
Yeah.
I knew it was purely soft tissue. It was minor, a strain injury. So I, through my thought process, first thing I did was I put some kinesiology tape on it that day and that night just to help drain that inflammation.
Yeah.
Second thing, I woke up the next morning, I felt around, went to range of motion, active, passive, and I felt that active eccentric was the thing that was really
the troublemaker.
Yeah, exactly. So that told me that there's definitely some soft tissue damage in there.
Yeah.
And I chose the laser therapy because that I felt would be the best, the most conducive to healing soft tissue the quickest.
Sure.
As opposed to, I mean, I'll probably still do some intramyssed soft tissue, some hot grips on it.
I like how you use the word soft tissue and not muscle, because I think like people really, they use those terms synonymously where they're not, like where you're pointing. I mean, that's like musculotendinous, ligamentous, depending on like what part of the elbow. So it's like, I think that, I mean, I would have done, it sounds like I would have done the same thing depending on the area, but it's always like, be wary. I mean, if you said this before, we'll say it again. You know, if your only tool is a hammer, everything's a nail, right?
Exactly.
You come in with fucking melanoma. I got it. Graston tool right here. We're going to scrape it out. We're going to scrape out the skin cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, that kind of leads me to an aside point. With instrument-assisted soft tissue mobilization, like, right? That's the only noise. And it's like, this is a classic case of, like, dose dependency that I think, to me, I sort of have, like, a saying to live by. It's the intent in which you do things, not the extent to which you do things, right? So it's like, Instagram now, and, you know, we're perpetrators of this, practitioners who are also athletes trying to build a name, and it's like, if you leave someone's office and you just look like you went 12 rounds with a fucking like Bengal tiger, like that is not okay. Like it's not okay. That's assault with a weapon. Like that's 3 to 5 minimum upstate. Like that's one thing I'm really worried about. Cause have you had people like kind of self-proclaim like, hey, I'm here for instrument assisted soft tissue.
Usually line is here. I'm here for grafting.
Oh, grafting, sure. Grafting. All right, yeah, let me just like go grab the skin I got in the back. We'll get you good. But it's like...
It's not grafting.
Yeah, so I mean, people, again, the uninitiated, Graston is the common term.
Yeah.
Just a company, like Coca-Cola. Like you want a soda pop, as your Americans call it, and you ask someone for... It was a company that had the patent on the tools for like 25 years, patents expired. Yeah. More companies, more innovative companies have come through since and made products. I think the underlying, I think it was year 212. Gua Sha, Asian medicine is where it stems from, more so like meridian lines. But anyways, so we use the IASTM, instrument-assisted soft tissue mobilization, Graston, almost synonymous.
That's an umbrella term.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So like, but people will come in and then be, I'm here to get Graston. It's like... Let's back up a second. Let me check the diploma on the wall and see if it's your name or my name. It's like, I think, again, and people get like a psychological dependency on a treatment that's worked for them. But just because it's worked for you in a certain area doesn't mean it's necessarily what you need. Like, you know, if you come in with like, I don't know, you slept on a couch for like 3 days and some weekend thing and your back hurts. And you just like maybe spinal adjusting might be a more conducive, but they come in and that's all they've had on their elbow. And it's like, oh, can you like graft my lower back? And it's like, maybe not the case. So like you said, clinical experience, I think plays a huge role in deciding treatment modality. So, I mean, I would rather see a jack of all trades because I really don't think you can be a master of one of these. I think the mastery comes in knowing which one to use.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's like every situation is different just because that Graston worked last time you know, pulled your bicep doesn't mean that's what needs to happen this time.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
So Yeah, so that's a very good point on that. Why don't you tell me a little bit? We'll lead that into your treatments in season, off season.
Yeah, I mean, I'm like once a week, spinal adjusting, full spine, go in, got a guy, or, you know, come see you.
Yeah, exactly. Right?
We'll just line it up. But, and again, it's because we both practice similar. It's why we both end up on each other's tables, because it's, mm-hmm. to me, it's depending on the area, depending on thing. Because, I mean, I'm in the thick of it now, just like you are. So it's, we're chasing symptoms right now. Like, if my knee hurts, we're going to focus on the hip, focus on the knee, get me to a point where I can squat in 2 days. Yeah. We'll worry about like the underpinning hip instability shit in, you know, 6 weeks, 7 weeks when I'm clear of competition. And you can try and credit the account in like a prehab setting, like pre-workout mobility, stability drills and stuff like that. Have a mindfulness of what could be causing it, from like even everything from like, a, you know, like the prehab mobility, even into like how you're cueing your compound movements. But at the end of the day, it's like, once you switch into that, once the caffeine hits and you're switched on, the music is going, it's like, I'm totally okay with treating symptoms in season, mm-hmm. right? Like,
yourself, this is, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, even in my athlete, like, that is the difference to me, and this is something we'll get into detail later, is that's the difference between a competitive athlete and, like, a recreational.
A weekend warrior,
yeah. right? Where it's like, you know, if you're competing at a high enough level, and it, you know, I have a lateral meniscus injury in my right knee. I've had it since I played hockey. I think it happened like 6 or 7 years ago. There will always be a structural instability in my right knee that needs to be compensated with by right hip, right? So right hip is always tight in an attempt to stabilize the lateral knee. Mm-hmm. There's only so much I can do. There's only so many single leg exercises I can do, loaded stability work I can do to get this to a point where I can squat heavy. Now it's like, let's try and ride that into the meet, because it's like, I need to be able to squat heavier than someone else, right? It's not a competition. Powerlifting isn't bench, deadlift, and fucking Bulgarian split squat with a kettlebell in your lead hand. It's squat, bench, deadlift, right? So I got to be able to get this to a point where I squat and then be able to maintain it through. Mm. Is that for everyone? No. And this is a big problem I run into with clinicians that aren't athletes trying to deal with athletes. It's like, you won't understand the mindset. Like, how many people end up in your office that have been to 3 other chiros or PTs before? Oh, it hurts when you squat?
Don't squat.
Yeah. Solution. Write it on the prescription pad, right?
All right. Well, that's it.
Thanks very much. But it's like having the empathy of being an athlete and also being a practitioner, I think, goes a long way. So as far back to the question, as far as my own treatment goes, very similar to yours.
Yeah.
You know, off season comes in, I'll run down the imbalances, push the active care treatment out a little bit further, pretty vigorous self-assessment of underpinning imbalances, which for someone who's an athlete and not a clinician, I think could benefit, like those athletes could benefit greatly from maybe introducing a little bit more care in their off season,
yeah.
but setting a trajectory for how to manage them. You know, go to someone that'll teach you how to fish, not someone that's going to give you a fish, right?
Absolutely.
That's sort of a saying, because it's like, if you don't know what to fix, you don't know how to fix it, right? So, I mean, their pain is the check engine light coming on, right? A lot of times it's not the main cause, like where you feel it isn't why you feel it, sort of thing. So yeah. I think a good off season should start with an athlete that's not a clinician or maybe not so in tune with like their body and their mechanics in an office for a thorough assessment with someone that'll set out a course of action for them for their off season. So the next time they're in season again, that palliative symptom chasing has to be less and less and less.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think for me, this is probably a good segue. We're talking about the difference between like athletes and non-athletes.
Yeah.
Oh, like, have sure. you heard of the Goldman dilemma?
Yes. Yes.
You want to elaborate on that?
Yeah. So that's, what was it? They asked a population of Olympians versus non-Olympians.
Yeah, so the original one was Olympians in, this was, it started in the 80s. They did it like biannually for like a decade. So every other year for 10 years, they asked.
So they said, if I give you this drug, this magic pill that will guarantee a gold medal at the Olympics, but you will then die 5 years from now.
Within five years.
Would you take this? And then, what was it, over half of them said they would.
Over half every single
time. Of the Olympic competitive athlete population.
Yeah.
And then the population that was not competitive athletes was 0.008%.
Yeah.
Percent.
Yeah.
So that's less than one person per 100.
So I think, yeah, what it was, the original one was biannual attendance. Imagine, you're 26, right? Our birthdays aren't far off.
Like no, mid-June.
Yeah.
June.
Imagine being dead by, what, 31? But that's even, because we're both in sports that aren't, you know, CrossFit's not in the Olympic
they're
Games.
They're not Olympic sports, not right.
Olympic Games. So there's a certain, but I mean, my wife was in the Olympics.
Yeah.
And I think there was a point where if you asked her that, she'd take the deal.
Yeah.
I think if you asked her that now, she'd say, wait, I don't got to deal with this guy in 5 years. Yeah, I get a gold medal. Yeah.
Different reasoning now.
Sign me up.
Shit.
But yeah, I mean, it's an amazing mindset because like, if you ask anyone who's, I think, like, you know, serious professional in their career, whether it's finance or business or real estate or anything, where even they are chasing something at the highest level,
mm-hmm.
I don't think that primal competition exists in anything else but sport, right? Like, if you went to a Wall Street guy and said, hey, man, you could be, like, COO or CEO of, like, Goldman Sachs, but you'd be dead in 5 years. Nah.
Exactly.
Nah, I'm cool. It's
I think it's that definitive line, in which we primarily have in sports, is winning versus losing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
There's two very distinct feelings.
Yeah.
And it's either one or the other. There's no gray area. There's no in between. You know, if this, you tell that same, you know, stockbroker, you can be this CEO, die in 5 years, or you could be a CEO at a less successful company, still be a fucking millionaire.
Yeah.
But you're going to live the rest of your life.
Sounds
like
good.
That's the gray area right there. You don't have that in sport.
And I think too, if you redid this study now, it would be even more so, because I think that hard line between, you know, the facet of sport that is competitive is getting so much more competitive.
Oh, yeah.
And then the people who are sort of, you know, willy nilly, like, you know, there's kids growing up that play, like, rep soccer that they don't keep score. It's like, you should have thought of that before you told the kids how to fucking count, man. they know what the score is. It's like, not everyone's a winner. That's not, life is going to kick you in the head if you think it was, like, smiley face, that was the outcome of the game. So I think there's, like, a very polar shift in sports, more so than there's ever been, because there's that very just weak counterpoint, very sensitive, you know, don't hurt Johnny's feelings. It's the, like,
fucking participation rig.
Yeah, exactly.
Participation
rig. No, you're either first or last. That's
right.
It.
Ricky,
that's
Bobby.
Exactly.
That's
words
right.
to live by. And it's just, to me, it's just, I think it's really creating like a polarity in sports where it's like, you know, the people who go after it are, it's life or death. And that's what makes them really good at it, is the raised stakes. And then there's the other end of the spectrum, is kids picking dandelions in the outfield, getting a pat on the back from their mom after the game.
Yeah.
Good job.
And that kind of leads us into, how do you treat that person versus how do you treat, you know, the other population that's not a competitor?
Like, how do you have a guy that comes in that's willing to die for this and is admitting that he's in a bit of pain?
Exactly. So you're going to have to kind of interpret that.
Yeah.
Like, okay, well, we'll put it in perspective for you. I'm in a bit of pain, but I have to squat as much weight as I possibly can in 3 weeks from now.
Yeah.
So him saying he's in a bit of pain is going to be, that's enough pain to distract his focus from his goal, that he knows something's going to mess with that. He's not going to be able to perform at his best. So that's probably a significant amount of pain if it's something that he can't just push through.
Yeah.
Right?
Whereas, it's funny, because I worked in a corporate setting for a bit. So we're referring to a verbal analog scale, a 10 point scale.
Yeah.
1, 0 is walking in the park, and 10 is, I don't know.
10 is a gunshot wound.
A gunshot wound. Okay.
Yeah.
So I've walked in, or had patients walk into the corporate office I was at, and look me dead in the eye. Walked in. And that's an important part to the
visualize.
With their own 2 feet, walked in, not bleeding, and is looking me in the eye and go, like, oh, I have neck pain. Where does it rank? Verbal analog scale. 0 is a walk in the park. 10 is a gunshot wound. It's like a 9.
A 9.
It's like, what if I punched you in the face? It's like, I don't see any visible lacerations. I can assure you, sir, it's not a 9.
You don't have a puncture lung.
Yeah.
You haven't been stabbed.
You're in my office. Like, it's not like a 10 out of 10. I mean, there's severe acute disc injuries that I'm sure can be excruciatingly painful. Those people, like, loss of bowel, blah. Like, if you come in and shit yourself in my door, okay, you know what? I'll give you a pass. Probably a 10. I think you earned it. You're paying for the carpet cleanup, yeah, but you earned it.
I swear to God, if anyone comes and shits in my office, yeah, because of this, I'm going to be so, yeah, pissed.
Well, I mean, they're, I'm sure there's plenty of other reasons people shit in your office. But so, yeah, it's an interesting, and it comes back to clinical experience, where you need to time, because pain is subjective.
It's very, right, subjective.
To that dude who's never been punched in the face, who's never been shot or stabbed, yeah, it's like, I mean, like, someone will come in and say, like, an 8 or 9 out of 10, and they walked in, and they just, like, were able to articulate this without spitting up blood, and it's like, to you, you use the gunshot wound?
Yeah, I use gunshot wound.
So scale that. Someone walks in and goes, 8 out of 10. How do you bring it from gunshot wound to one step, yeah, below to one, and then that's where they're at? Like, how do you scale that?
Right. That even more so the experience. So if it were that office worker that's, you know,
yeah,
they have levator scap pain because they're mousing out of position, sure, all day, you have to think, like, what's their daily exertion?
Yeah.
Like, do they go to the gym? Do they work out? Do they, yeah, have, you know, any fitness background, any of that? That's one point. Yeah. If not, then you have to take it back a step, right? Because that competitiveness,
yeah,
that urge will let you experience more pain. And I feel like, you know, very specifically, athletes have a very high pain tolerance.
Yeah.
Because I'm not saying that the stuff we put ourselves through is actual pain every, yeah, day, but it's a very uncomfortable feeling.
Sure.
I think
episode one, you're like, yeah, CrossFit fucking hurts.
Dude, it fucking hurts.
Yeah, I couldn't, like, right? Dude, just so, thinking about, like, box jumping, burpee, snatch things, I'm tired just from, yeah, thinking about that.
So that's the differentiating line for me, is discomfort versus pain.
Okay.
Okay, and there can be overlap there, but this person, they're probably in a very high level of discomfort.
Okay.
Which may they're be different
mistaking
than, yeah, pain. Which they're mistaking for pain.
Okay.
So pain, yeah, like internal bleeding, you have broken ribs, you're down to one lung, you're probably in a lot of fucking pain.
Do you try to scale it for them? Like, the guy that comes in, the techie Silicon Valley guy comes in and says 8 out of 10, where you've set a cap for that pain scale at bullet wound. Do you talk him down from that ledge? You go, all right, no. Like, no, you don't go like 9 is like, you know, car wreck going 100. 8, we're looking at like prison shank with a toothbrush, like that. Do you try and like bring them to that level, or you just let them?
I just let them perceive it. Yeah, that's their subjective perception of how they're feeling. Mm. So I'll just ask them again later and see where they're at.
Okay, because
you know, an 8 down to a 1, that looks fucking great for me.
Take it, yeah.
I'm not saying that's why I do it, but I'm saying that that's, you know, that's how they perceive their level of discomfort or pain, whatever it may be. So I try not to have any bearing on that.
Yeah.
I just take it for what it is. But in my mind, I know, just like you, all right, you know, you didn't get hit by a car today. You're probably not in that much pain, but it's probably a high level of discomfort, which we can make a pretty good impact.
Okay. Now, so you feel like, I mean, when I see an athlete, I feel like their pain is very objectifiable. It's pounds off of total, right? Like it's reps off a set. That's the measure. Like that to me is what would bring me into an office, or what brings me, you know, when I bug you to fix my shit, it's because like, dude, I couldn't hit third rep of my triple.
Uh-huh, absolutely.
It's like, I don't look at it as pain. It's like, there's a thing in the way that stopped me from doing, get the thing that was in my way that stopped me from doing it. So like my pain is much more objective, in a sense that it can be visualized and quantified in a way that's not a verbal analog scale. People can see when I'm in pain. It's like, oh, the fuck's up, dude? Like, why is he not benching more than he's benching? Like, I know he can bench more than that.
Yeah.
Objectivity, people can notice it. Where it's like, on the flip side of that, that 8 out of 10 desk jockey guy, his pain is more subjective.
Yes.
Do you have an easier time getting results with one side or the other? Like, I find the athlete population more rewarding to work with because of that objectivity, not just to me and to them, but to everyone else around. Like, they go back in the gym the next day and it's like, you know, they hit that triple and they take it for 5.
Yeah.
Dude, what the fuck, man? Like, you weren't even hitting warm-up weights. And then, like, but that's also more difficult because you're chasing something that's objective.
Yeah.
Where it's like the dude that comes in is like, oh, my neck hurts. It's an 8 out of 10. I've been coding the iPhone 10 for the last whatever the fuck. Then that's almost easier but less rewarding. It's like, oh, you were sitting down for, oh, get a sit stand desk. You know, like, don't, like, relax your shoulders, strengthen some lower trap stuff. Like, I find for me, you can get much more, maybe on like that verbal analog scale where they're telling you it's an 8, you can get them down to like a 1 or 2 visit to
one, 2 visits.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Where it's,
and that's exactly what I think about it is that definitely more rewarding to work with the athlete, and you'll have better long-term progress with that person because they're much more compliant. They see that goal, right? They're like, you know, I have to hit this 700-plus pound squat in a couple weeks, or someone that's in the CrossFit Open, they know, you know, I have to finish in the top 20 in my region.
Yeah.
And that's a very objective thing. Either you do it or you don't do it. They're going to take whatever steps they need to in that time that's allowed to get them from point A to point B, where they objectively accomplish their goal, as opposed to someone on that more subjective side of pain. They're going to see some results really quick, and they'll be like, oh, yeah, it worked. I took the magic pill, walk away, not change anything in their life, maybe not even remember the stretches or the exercises you showed them, and they'll be back in your office in another 6 to 8 weeks because the same thing's happening again.
So, and it's an interesting, I'm going to flip that on its head even further, where the desk jockey will come in suffering from symptoms, right?
Uh-huh.
And then what they'll do is that when they're not suffering from symptoms anymore, they think the underpinning thing is over.
Yeah.
Now, I want to contrast suffering from symptoms and suffering from a diagnosis, right? Because I think this is something that clinicians have to walk a fine line on, is people that carry a condition with them. Some of the stuff that MRI reports to the uninitiated, damning. Like people who don't realize the severity of what some of these radiological terms are, what some of like the musculoskeletal terms are, what's tendinosis versus tendinopathy versus enthesopathy versus, and then into the X-ray stuff, herniations, sequestrations, even degenerative disc disease.
Yeah.
Right? Do you come across people that suffer from a diagnosis?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's maybe 50% of the people I see. And it might even be more than that, because it'll be that person that said, yeah, I herniated a disc when I was in college, and I just haven't been right since.
And they're now like 40 years old.
And I'm sorry, but that is 100% bullshit.
Ooh.
So a disc injury, a disc herniation, first thing I think about with that is, okay, is your disc herniation causing your symptoms?
Sure.
Is that the root problem? Or did you have symptoms, you went to go get an MRI, and there happens to be a disc herniation, which is an incidental finding at that point?
Because that's the thing. People think it's a very binary, disc injury equals pain. But
I guarantee you, if you looked at both of our spines right now, we both have multiple disc herniations. I'm sitting here, I'm not in pain. I'm fine. Are you? Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Most people walking around on this earth probably have a disc herniation right now. But they probably don't have symptoms from it.
Yeah.
And just because you do have that herniation and you do have symptoms, you have to make that connection. You have to make sure that that's what's causing it for that to be the diagnosis for those symptoms. Yeah. Right? You could just have you could have a case of sciatica, musculoskeletal sciatica.
Like piriformis.
Yeah, piriformis syndrome. Stuff like that, where it's a very peripheral thing. It doesn't have anything to do with your spine, but you're having nerve irritation due to, something that's going on there. But you know, maybe you go to someone who doesn't know that, who doesn't care to search for that, and they say, all right, we're going to send you out for some imaging. They look at your back, you have a herniated disc that might not even correlate to that, but they're going to say, okay, here's a herniated disc, you're having sciatica, that's the cause.
N equals one.
Yeah.
That is,
exactly. They're not going to do any more investigation or any other stuff. It's just laziness at that point, right? Or just a correlation equals causation, which we've been over before. That doesn't equal. Yeah. No. One thing does not mean another. That's apples do not equal oranges in that situation.
And I just think, too, like, it's pretty ingrained into, like, Western medicine. Like, I've had patients that have told me anecdotally they've gone to radiologists, they've gone to specialists with, like, severe nerve occlusion at, like, the disc level. Disc level or even, like, bone overgrowth, foraminal encroachment. Radiologists have walked into the room. This one patient of mine in particular, the radiologist walked into the room, told the guy's ambulatory, he's walking around, he's up stretching kind of thing, like, got his leg up on the doctor's desk, stretching through his glutes. And the radiologist walks in, looks at him standing up, and leaves the room. Comes back 5 minutes later, goes, are you so-and-so? Like, yeah. And the person looks down at the image, and because that's what they do, right? They're in a dark room all day with computer screens and $2.3 million machines, and they just see, has this crossed the line? They take, how many measurements is it? And they think that direct correlation or the causation of pain. So this radiologist looked at an image and looked at my patient and then said, oh, this can't be the right room. Because what I'm looking at here, this dude should be in a wheelchair.
Right.
healthy as shit, up walking around, that kind of thing. So I think, you know, having that imagery in mind of like, you feel how you feel, right? Yeah. And this is something that bothers me about a lot of like, some of the onus is on a patient, but a lot of it's on the chiropractor. People will come in, I don't know if you ever get this, they ask for objective feedback to subjective feelings. I can't feel for you, right? How does it feel, doc? You tell me. Like, I feel great. You know, it's, you know, the weather is, it's not raining anymore. I feel pretty, it's tax season. I'm a little bit stressed, but like, I can't tell how your back feels. You have to tell me, because when you leave, I feel the same way.
Yeah.
Right. But you'll get clinicians like, oh yeah, oh, oh, they'll like adjust someone's low back for whatever asinine reason, and it'll make a loud noise, and like, they'll implant this idea of objective success to try and change their subjective perception, which drives me up the wall. And I've had it like done to me. I've heard it, I've seen it. And it's like, you feel how you feel. And if you're feeling how you feel and you feel better because someone is like, oh yeah, oh wow, well, things are really, it's like, then you're not really in pain, right? Like, yeah. To me, there is a psychological component to pain, but don't let someone oversell you on their objective findings to your subjective feelings, right? Don't let them tell you how you feel. Like, yeah. Oh, yeah, it feels better, right? Yeah, huh? It's just like, some, like, that to me is like, sign, snake oil salesman, get the fuck out of there. It comes down to like, I guess with the people that will be listening to this, the idea of like finding empathetic practitioners, right? Like, you're not going to look an athlete in the eye and go, you probably need to come back like 3 times a week forever. Your kids probably got scoliosis too, so bring them in. Oh, you don't have kids? Well, you should bring in someone else's kids anyways, because I fucking need a new boat. So it's like finding someone who's you know, who can get it done in the gym,
right?
Get it done, or whatever your discipline is,
yeah.
Right?
Anyone who sells you a treatment package, like, oh yeah, you're gonna need to come in 6 days a week for the first 35 weeks, and then we'll do 2 days a week for the next 2 years.
Like, imagine that's gonna be 35 doing that.
Yeah,
like, going into your doctor's office.
It's bullshit.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, there can be some levels, some certain conditions where maybe it is a scoliosis or something where vigorous spinal adjusting, you're gonna see better results.
Yeah,
maybe,
and it's something that isn't going away.
Yeah, exactly. If it's a structural issue, yeah, that might be something that you might have to do.
Yeah.
But for most people, well, I'll start by saying this. Like we said before, pain should not be what always brings you in.
Yeah.
Right? Pain will always be the last symptom to appear,
yeah,
and the first one to go away.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly. I think that second part. Yeah.
So pain is that thing that it's there for a short period of time.
Yeah.
But even way before you feel that pain, there's something wrong.
Mm.
There's an underlying problem.
It's a sub-threshold at that point.
Yes, sub-threshold. It's not to the point where you're feeling that discomfort, that pain. Mm. And then we do a little bit of work. The pain goes away. It's still there.
Yeah.
The problem's still there. Still sub-threshold.
Yeah.
But it's just waiting. It's just waiting for that next, you know, straw to break the camel's back to come back out. So just because you're in pain, that's not the best reason to go see your chiropractor, see your primary care physician, whatever it is, take action.
We'll say
that's not the best reason to take action. You should know your body. First thing I tell people when they come in here, they're like, well, I mean, it hurts, my arm goes numb when I go overhead. I'm like, is that normal?
Yeah.
I'll say, absolutely not.
Yeah.
Pain is not a normal sensation.
Yeah.
Right? You should never be in pain just walking around.
Yeah.
Numbness, tingling, stuff like that, not a normal sensation.
Yeah.
Right? So those are all things that are just telling you there's something underlying that you need to take care of. And that might not just be taking care of it when it hurts. That's taking care of it to get rid of the problem.
Yeah. Because that's the thing, treating symptoms and treating causes.
Exactly.
Where it's like, you know, you go to that athlete, 4th and long, Super Bowl. He's going to fucking Disney World if he makes this. And then he fucks up his ankle. PT comes on the sideline with like a 3 mil full of cortisone. Like, hey, this is going to wear down your ankle. It's degenerative in nature and it's very substance. What do you want me to do? Give me that fucking thing. Into the ankle. Where's it go? Here? Bam! Into the ankle you go. Now, there's a monetary, there's a psychological, there's a motivating factor. This is a guy who's willing to die within 5 years to do what he's going to do. If you're some soccer dad who plays pickup hockey on a Saturday night, It's not game seven, bro. It's not fourth and long. Yeah. So, again, it comes down to knowing where you're at on the spectrum of athleticism and what you're willing to sacrifice. We talked about that in the episode about, like, extrinsic motivation, imagery, mm-hmm. that kind of thing, whereas, you know, the internal motivation versus extrinsic motivation of, like, hey, you know, I'm going to pay a trainer because I know if I'm not losing monetary value, then I'm not going to adhere to anything. Whereas a similar idea here, it's like, if you're not like in it for the long haul, take it easy, all right?
Exactly. And I say that so much with CrossFit, is that these people come in an hour out of their day, Monday through Friday, just to get a workout, right? They're not at the CrossFit Games. Yeah. They're not going to the CrossFit Games. And they'll be so into this workout, which, if you guys are CrossFitters, you know that when you're in a workout, it's you have that adrenaline. You're going for it. You know, it drives you to finish, especially that some of that is your competitive nature as well, because you see everyone around you.
Yeah.
But you need to realize that if you're pushing through pain, you're probably creating further damage.
Sure.
You know, you're fucking yourself up more. Yeah. And if this is just a hobby for you, if this is your mode of fitness and exercise to make you healthier over a long period of time.
If you got to go to Home Depot after this, you're not like you're really you got to scale it to your life a little bit.
Exactly. Exactly. You should not be pushing through pain. And that's, we hit on that a little bit earlier, is pain versus discomfort. Yeah. Like, you have to differentiate. Are you in pain? Are you doing structural damage to your body by doing this?
Yeah.
Or are you just uncomfortable because you've been sitting on your couch for the last 3 years and it hurts to breathe hard?
And I think an interesting point is like, hey, I think, easy with that. I think it's, you need to flip like that. And you were talking about knowing the difference between pain and discomfort from, like, maybe a more sedentary desk jockey lifestyle.
Yeah.
But athletes need to know the difference between pain and discomfort from the flip side of that spectrum, where it's like, hey, dude, that discomfort that you're feeling, you've blown fucking meniscus, man. We need to talk to an ortho in the off season.
Yeah.
We need to, like, you know, you might need surgery. And that, I think, is more dangerous because they're downselling their pain, right? So that comes down to that clinical experience. When a guy walks in and, like, he's limping, but he's a high-level athlete, it's like, okay, we got to sign a weakness here. Like, there's blood in the water. Like, this is not okay. He's going to tell you it too, but you might be more prompted to, like, send this guy out for an image than the guy that comes in like, oh, my God, oh, my neck is so... And, like, making a big scene of who's upselling, right? Like, who's upselling his pain, who hates his job and, like, hates his kids. And there's, like, well, you know what I mean? It's, like, you know, a little bit of a psychological component of pain. No, exactly. But it's, like, he's in a position where upselling his pain is going to be more... He's looking for that sympathy where... You know, the guy coming in, you know, off the football field or whatever is like, you hear that 2 out of 10. It's like, fuck, man. Like, I'm looking at, you know, I'm looking at a kid who's 6'2", 260, runs of sub 4.5 40. He's going to bench 220. 2 out of 10?
Yeah.
Dude, we got to talk. We got to get some imaging.
Someone that gets hit by other human beings
for a living. And so I think clinical experience is really, it boils down to it. But not negating the fact that you have a responsibility as a patient to know where you're at, to understand, like, because at the end of the day, you have your own say in what goes on. I think people walk into the office and they just turn over the keys.
Yeah.
And you're like, hey, you got a fancy diploma on the wall.
Uh-huh.
Tell me where to go. And it's like, you have the decision, and people to turn over that right to whoever. I mean, if you walk into an ortho's office as your primary entrance of your complaint,
you're probably getting surgery.
Yeah, going under the knife, man. And more likely than if you walk into our office, and be different than if you walked into a massage therapist or shit. Even a consultation with a personal trainer could be all you really need to get out of pain, right?
It's true.
So
I have so many people that come in, and I could tell. I'll tell them right now just by doing orthopedic tests. Look, you have instability in your shoulder.
Yeah.
You have a couple options from here. I want you to make your best decision that fits your lifestyle the best. You can strengthen the fuck out of your rotator cuff, get as stable as you can, get as functional as you can, and live life just fine.
Yeah.
Or, you know, if it's to the point where you can't get through life or you can't do the things you want to do, you know, surgery's an option.
Yeah.
You know, so maybe not the best option, but that's your choice.
Yeah, exactly. And that's where, like, so what's it worth to you? So educate them. Exactly. Because I think if you work in a field that is more higher volume, spend less time, you're not going to get that education where it's like... You know, maybe the physician's fully aware that, you know, the only tool isn't a hammer,
but they don't have the time to rip through the tool belt and say, well, this is a wrench and this is a screwdriver and this is a this and this is a that. They just go, oh, okay, here. PT, you go ice and stim. They'll probably prompt you to go to an ortho surgery, back to the PT after 6 to 8 weeks, mm-hmm. and you're on the shelf for a month when all it took was, you know, conservative care. So I'm going to take a little bit more time. Yeah. So I think that's a good place to wrap it up. We've gone through a lot. How you assess treatment in an off season.
Yeah.
How I implement treatment in an off season. The different modalities we go through. Kind of when to use what, where, sort of thing. Difference between being an athlete and being a recreation, like what's it worth to you, I think mm-hmm. is a huge thing that people need to realize, and having that self-awareness of looking themselves in the mirror and saying, okay, this is where I lie on the spectrum, right? Like I'm far off the CrossFit Games or far off breaking world records. Maybe I should tone it down a bit. Yeah. There's a life worth living outside the gym. Sometimes it doesn't feel like that, but it's true. Different between pain and discomfort. And then like clinical experience when it comes to calibrating like verbal analog scales, like is this 8 out of 10? Like yeah. did this guy just
get shanked?
Right. Yeah. So I think now would be a good time to pay the bills. So shout out Lunderjack Productions. Yes. If you haven't checked them out, be sure to do so. Our boy Kyle up in Toronto produces this for us.
All right. Engine Fitness.
Engine, the boy.
Yeah, big shout out if you guys need any home fitness equipment, gyms too. He's your hookup. Great deals on some great products.
Instagram.
Yeah.
I'm not loving it. Like, we're really not getting the feedback I wanted to get.
Yeah. Yeah. Comment us.
We're just going to put up full frontals soon.
Full frontal on Instagram.
Yeah. That's next.
That'll
next
be weird. Step, yeah. It's going to get weird on Instagram, but follow us.
5-star rating review.
Yes.
Keep them coming. Subscribe. Like. So we know we're not just screaming into a void.
Yeah. Write us some reviews. Get some feedback.
That'd be a good idea. That? Yeah, I know probably a lot of meatheads out there. Yeah. Get someone to write it for you if you're not comfortable with like English.
Yeah, if you're not good with the alphabet.
Yeah. But yeah, until next time.
All right, we'll see you later, guys.
Catch you later.